Good morning, IBC. Two great occurrences on this Sunday morning. The first is we have navigated the time change again, which is no small thing. At least most of us did. A whole lot of people in the first service didn't. But anyway, but the second great occurrence today is that we actually apologize as a church to St. Francis of Assisi. So I just think these are two great benchmarks in our history. In the scripture that we just heard read from John chapter 17, verses 20 to 26, we have Jesus praying for his disciples and for all who will believe through them. That means he's also praying for who? Us. He's praying for his disciples, which were the first church, and through them, all who would believe through their message, which is all the churches across the centuries coming out of two millennia of ministry and missions in the Great Commission. And I love how he prays for us because it helps us to understand his strategy for us in accomplishing the assignment that he's given us as Christians. To take this good news of his into all the world and make disciples of the nations. Look what Jesus says in verse 20 of John 17. My prayer is not for them alone. He's talking about the 12. This is the night before he's crucified. And he's praying to the Father, not just for the disciples. I pray also for those who will believe in me through their message. As they take this good news of the gospel that they will know after my ascension into heaven, there are many people in the world that are going to believe. And those people, in turn, are going to take the message of the gospel and the good news in their generation and so on and so forth through thousands of years until we come to IBC today. We've been given this message, we have believed, and now we are tasked with the Great Commission as well. My prayer is not for them alone. I pray also for those who will believe in me through their message, that all of them may be one, Father, just as you are in me and I am in you. May they also be in us, praying for IBC. May IBC also be in us so that the world may believe that you have sent me. Now, you all know what our vision at IBC is. Can you tell me what it is? That was pretty pathetic. Come on, what's our vision at IBC? A transformed and a transformed. Bingo. Did you see both of those in Jesus' prayer? Lord, I'm praying that they may be one, that our people, my people in the church throughout the millennia will be one in us and be transformed into a community of unity so that as the world sees the community in unity, they will believe that you sent me. What do we believe when we believe that the Father sent Jesus? That's shorthand for the gospel, right? John 3:16, for God so loved the world that he sent his only begotten Son, that whoever believes in him should not perish, but have eternal life. That's shorthand for the gospel. A transformed people, a transformed city. That's what Jesus is praying for us. He's praying three prayers in this passage that will enable us as his people, if we fulfill the prayers that Jesus prays, to accomplish the Great Commission. That's pretty heady stuff. That's pretty big stuff. Do you want to look at the three things that Jesus prays for IBC? Okay, let's look at them. Verse 22, Jesus continues, I have given them the glory that you gave me, that they may be one as we are one, I in them and you in me, so that they may be brought to complete what? Unity. Then the world will know that you sent me and have loved them even as you loved me. What's Jesus' first prayer for IBC and other churches around the world in our day? What is his prayer for us? He prayed that IBC would model the unity of God's community. What's he talking about there when he talks about being one as we are one? He's speaking to his Father. And he's saying, we want the church to experience the same fellowship and the unity in community that the Holy Trinity experiences, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, the perichoresis, the dance of the eternal Godhead from before eternity, from before creation. It's pretty cool that Jesus is praying for that kind of community in unity for his church that he experiences in the Trinity of God. And that's what he's praying for here. Jesus wants for us at IBC what he has with the Father and the Spirit, spiritual oneness and community. Now, whenever we read this passage, and I've been reading and studying this with Christians over the years, we always have to come back and define our terms. What is unity here? Whenever Jesus says, I pray that they will be one in unity, what on earth does that mean? A lot of people think it means uniformity, that, okay, we'll all look alike, dress alike, talk alike, we'll all like the same music, we'll all agree on politics, we'll all what have you. If that's unity, I gave up on that a long time ago. But that's not unity. Warren Wiersbe has a great statement. He says, Christian harmony is not based on the externals of the flesh, but the internals and the eternals of the spirit in the inner person. I love that. It's not externals, but it's internals and eternals. Try saying that fast, real fast, three times. We must look beyond the elements of our first birth, race, color, abilities, etc., and build our fellowship on the essentials of our new birth. Not the externals. We will never be uniform on the externals. But isn't that where we fight most of our battles? Not the externals, but the internals and the eternals. Whenever we do that, my friends, whenever we look at the internals and the eternals, the fact of the gospel that Jesus has loved us and has given his life for us, and that we can be ushered into his forever family along with all others who believe in him, if only we'll put our faith in him. That is the truth that unites us. Not stuff that we're against, but somebody that we're for. And that's Jesus. When we keep the main thing, which is Jesus and the internals and the eternals, whenever we keep that the same, I have found an amazing phenomenon occurs. I've had the privilege of traveling all over the world over many years of ministry. 11 different countries in Africa, Haiti, Europe, the Far East, the Middle East. And wherever I have gone, taking the word of God and teaching and being with other Christians, wherever I have gone, as far away as, I have a couple pictures of India. Okay, this was a couple years ago. This is an Indian pastor, does not speak my language. But here's the phenomenon that occurs. I don't speak his language. This is a member of the church. I sure don't speak his language. Both of these men hug my neck because we were family. You see, that's what happens whenever you base your unity on the internals and the eternals and not the externals, is that those who have done that along with you in this world, men and women, boys and girls, they are your family. They are your family. Because the basis of your fellowship is Jesus. How can we experience and exhibit the kind of Christian unity that Jesus prays for us in this first prayer? When he prays that we will be one, that we will be unified. How can we exhibit that unity here at IBC? Well, this may disappoint you because it's simple and it's not complicated. It's certainly not rocket science. The first thing you have to do in order to exhibit unity in community is to join one. And I don't mean like coming and sitting in worship, and this is wonderful that we all gather here and there's a very specific purpose for this that we should all do. But I'm talking about a small group. I'm talking about a community in which you can really exhibit unity with brothers and sisters that you're on the journey with. You can't exhibit unity in the big room. You can exhibit unity in community. The internals and the eternals and not the externals in a small group. And if you want to exhibit, you got to join one. It's not rocket science. Why is that important? Listen to Eugene Peterson. He says, there can be no maturity in the spiritual life, no obedience in following Jesus, no wholeness in the Christian life apart from an immersion in an embrace of community. I am not myself by myself. That's one of those lines I wish I had written. I love that. I'm not myself by myself. As a Christian missionary disciple, a follower of Jesus, commissioned to go to the world with the message of Jesus and to love people, the Great Commission and the Great Commandment, we cannot become all that we are meant to be unless we're in community. Are you in community? I don't mean you just come to church. I mean all of the hundreds of small groups that exist here at IBC. We have our Bible communities. We have our men's and women's Bible studies that are all based on community. We have our foundation discipleship program for 9 weeks based around community groups that bleeds into formation, which is 9 months of small groups. All of our ministries in terms of service around here, from the meal teams to the medical clinic and all the other things that we're doing, are based on small groups. Communities of men and women and boys and girls who are on the journey together and are exhibiting and experiencing unity in community. That's fulfilling Jesus' prayer. We've got to join a community. And then once we join that community, we have to work at unity. Paul the Apostle addresses this in Ephesians when he says to Christians there at Ephesus in the church, he says, make every effort to keep the unity of the Spirit through the bond of peace. In other words, unity in community, keeping the main thing, that we're not about externals, but about internals and eternals, that doesn't happen by accident. It is strategic. It's a choice. It's something we have to work at. Make every effort to keep the unity of the Spirit through the bond of peace. There's one body, and it gets into the eternals and the internals. There's one body, one Spirit, just as you were called to one hope when you were called. One Lord, one faith, one baptism, one God and Father of all, who is over all and through all and in all. That is the internal. That is the eternal. That's what we base our unity around. But, oh my goodness, brothers and sisters, we know that the history of the church is not dead, don't we? The history of the church is a church of conflict and splits and disunity, all of which confirms to the world that is skeptical that God sent Jesus, It's exactly the opposite of Jesus' prayer. The great skeptic and agnostic, if not atheist, Mark Twain was famous in his day for telling this mythical story about how once he took a dog and a cat and put them in a cage together to experiment about how they'd get along. And he says they got along just fine. And that surprised Mark Twain, a dog and a cat in a cage. So he thought he would intensify the experiment a little bit. He put a pig and a bird in the cage with the dog and the cat to see how all of them would get along. He said they got along famously. He was so surprised about that. So he said, I'm going to intensify the experiment even more. I'm going to put a Baptist, a Presbyterian, and an Episcopalian in the cage. And he says, when I did that, there was not a living thing left within 10 minutes. Do you think that the disunity in the church in Mark Twain's day might have contributed to his lack of belief that Jesus is the Son of God sent from the Father? I do. It's just the opposite of what we're being prayed for by Jesus to do. I don't know if you know the name Heather King. Heather is a very accomplished and rather famous commentator on NPR, National Public Radio. And if you listen to NPR, you've heard Heather over the years. You know something awesome? Heather came to Christ not too long ago. And she came to Christ, yeah, she's very successful as a commentator, a radio personality. She's famous around the nation. She's also a recovering alcoholic. She's been through a lot of pain in her life. And she literally came to Jesus because she needed saving and she knew it. And he saved her. But she was worried about the consequences of her salvation because she knew that now that I'm a Christian, I probably have to go to church. I love this. Here's what she writes. She says, my first impulse was to think, my God, I don't want to get sober or in the case of the church worship with these nutcases. Nothing shatters our egos like worshiping with people we did not handpick. The humiliation of discovering that we are thrown in with people who are broken, misguided, wishy-washy, out for themselves. People who are us. Then she says, but we don't come to church to be with people who are like us in the way we want them to be. We come because we have staked our souls on the fact that Christ is the way, the truth, and the life, and the church is the best place, the only place to be, while we all struggle to figure out what that means. We come because we'd be hard-pressed to say which is the bigger of the two scandals of God, that he loves us or that he loves everybody else too. Love it. Jesus prayed for us to exhibit unity in community. And the implication of his prayer is that when the world actually sees that in our relationships in the church, they will be so blown away by the miracle of it because, you know, nobody else can experience that unity of community because everything outside of Christ is externals. And so everybody is torn apart by politics and by culture and by ethnicity and by socioeconomic standards and all the rest of it, except Christians who are actually experiencing this. It is a demonstration to the world that God is alive. And that's why they believe. We've been praying over the last several weeks for little David Stein, son of Jason and Tiffany, both staff members here at IBC. David was born really premature, and for a few days there, shortly after his birth, he was not doing well. We even thought we were going to lose him. Doctors said we're probably going to lose him. So, of course, pastors from IBC, we were down there at Medical City Hospital in that NICU unit, and we visited with, you know, the family, and you know, that wasn't a surprise to anybody at that hospital. The doctors, the nurses, even the other patients. Oh, here's a couple that their son is in deep danger, and so some pastors have come from their church to just kind of be with them. Didn't surprise anybody. That's what they pay us to do. You know what did surprise people down there? What did surprise doctors and nurses and other families in that waiting room and other people, friends of those families, was that it wasn't just the pastors from IBC that were with Jason and Tiffany. They are in community. They have a small group that they've been doing life with a bunch of other families from IBC. And those families took time off of work. And those families filled up and spilled out of the waiting room into the hallway, keeping vigil with Jason and Tiffany. And they weren't even paid to do that. I guarantee you, Medical City Hospital sat up and took notice of that. Just like Jesus prayed that they would. What's the second prayer that Jesus prays for us? Jesus prayed that IBC would experience the glory of God's servant heart. He prayed first for unity. Second, he prays for unity. I mean, glory. What did I say first? He prayed for unity. Now he prays for glory. Sorry, that lost hour of sleep, man, it's working on me. Look what Jesus says in verse 24. Father, I want those you have given me to be with me where I am and to see my glory, the glory you have given me because you loved me before the creation of the world. I want these men with me and all those who will believe through their message, I want them to behold my glory. Now, what is glory? Glory is very simply theologically defined as the visible manifestation of the divine. The way I would say it is, glory is what you see when you see God. The visible manifestation of the divine. Now, if you've been here the last 2 weeks, you heard me preach from John chapter 12 and John chapter 13 in the previous two successive weeks. In John chapter 12, we talked about the paradox of glory, which was, if you'll remember, Jesus is in the upper room in John chapter 12, and he's talking about going to the cross as his glory. And we defined Jesus' glory of the cross as sacrificing and experiencing the pleasure of the Father by doing the Father's will at great cost to himself. That's the paradox of glory. That's what we see Jesus doing. And Jesus wants us, he wants his disciples to understand that part of his glory was his sacrifice. And then in John 13, last week, we were talking about Jesus. He's washing the feet of the disciples. And he's doing that act of servanthood even as he's speaking to Peter about the good news of the gospel. And we saw that the paradox of the gospel is that the message of the gospel is most majestic and powerful when it's bundled up in acts of servanthood. So if glory is what we see when we see God, then what we see in God, Jesus, in John chapter 12 and 13, we see him being one who sacrifices to do the Father's will and one who serves the people of God. Sacrificial service. That's glory. Jesus prays that we will see his glory. The glory you have given me because you loved me before the creation of the world. Why does he want us to see his glory? So that we will reflect that glory by our own sacrifice, by our own service. This is the paradox of the gospel. It's the paradox of glory. Is that Jesus, who is the Messiah, he is the Son of God, he is the second member of the Trinity. He is the King. He exhibits the glory of God, the manifestation of the divine, by his servanthood and by his sacrifice. And so we see his glory because we see God. We are his servants. And as Jesus said in John chapter 13, if you were with us last week, Jesus said, I'm the Lord and you are my servants. And the servants are not greater than their master. So if I have served you, guess what, my friends, I want you to do. I want you to be a sacrificial server. And this is what he prays for in the upper room. He prays that we will reflect his glory. You say, Andy, how do we do that? At IBC, in my small group, how do I reflect his glory? So that the world, a skeptical world, will see God. Well, again, it's not rocket science. You got to serve sacrificially. That's it. You got to serve sacrificially. You got to be involved with God's people like Jesus in serving and sacrificing for people around us. That's it. Jesus prayed that you would. He prayed that I would. Let me tell you a story. There's a ministry here at IBC that's been going on for a few years called School Works. And we have scores of IBCers who for several years have taken their lunch hour, or basically for most of them, their lunch 2 hours that they take off, because a lot of our IBCers that are working in School Works as half-hour heroes or lunch buddies or readers in the public schools. That's what the School Works ministry is all about. A lot of them are downtown working in the office. They got to drive out here and go to Townsville Elementary or Barton Elementary, two of the most at-risk schools in our city. That's why we chose them, to spend their lunch hour once a week with a at-risk child in the public schools. Fred Kuna, Fred and Joanne been members of IBC forever. Fred has been a lunch buddy and a reader with Carlos for 6 years. I just wanted to tell you about Fred. For 6 years, Fred has been with this little boy, started with him at Townsend Elementary, went in every week and read with him, mentored him. About halfway through that 6 years, Carlos's family moved, and Carlos had to go to a different school, Barton Elementary. And Fred asked permission at Barton Elementary if he could continue coming in and doing his School Works ministry with Carlos. And they gave him permission, and he came in and did it. Fred has mentored this little boy. He has read to him. He has helped him in his life transition and navigate through changes in his family. And you know what Carlos said to Fred not too long ago? He said, hey, Mr. Kuna, will you be my reading buddy all the way through college? Jesus prayed that we would reflect his glory. What does that mean? He prayed that we would reflect his glory by sacrificial service. He prayed that we would give up a lunch hour to go be with a child whose life can be changed through your sacrificial service. You want to fulfill Jesus' prayer? Get involved, serve somewhere. And at IBC, there are places all over that you can do that. The third prayer that Jesus prayed for IBC. Jesus prayed that IBC would reflect the beauty of God's love. Verse 25, listen to him. Jesus says, righteous Father, though the world does not know you, and the implication is there, put this in your margin, though the world does not know you, and I want them to. The world doesn't know you, but I want them to. And so he's going to give us the strategy of how the world is going to come to know the Father. It's through us. Righteous Father, though the world does not know you, I know you, and they, my disciples, know that you have sent me. They know the gospel. They know me. They know you through the gospel. I have made you known to them and will continue to make you known in order that the love you have for me may be in them, and that I myself may be in them. And the implication is so that as they go into the world, that they will make the Father's love beautiful in the eyes of the world that does not as yet know you. Jesus prays that we would reflect the beauty of God's love. N.T. Wright, speaking of this prayer of Jesus in John chapter 17, he says the whole prayer in the end is about the love of the Father surrounding Jesus, and this same love as a bond and badge surrounding all of Jesus' people, making him present to them and to the world. Jesus prayed that we would reflect the beauty of God's love to the world. How do we do that? Well, first of all, we have to experience the beauty of God's love. And then, having experienced it, to give it away to everybody else who does not have it yet. Last week, I told you about something that happened here a couple weeks ago when our ministry to special needs people in the Metroplex, and it is a Metroplex-wide ministry, because most special needs families, especially when their special needs children grow into adulthood, they have no place in the Metroplex to go. They come from all over the Metroplex to Arise at IBC. 2 weeks ago, we had a special Arise ministry on a Saturday in which we brought in 30 special needs families from all over the place. 8 of those families that came in had never stepped foot on IBC campus before. To have what we call a day of victory. And you may remember a couple weeks ago when John Jones stood on this platform, he was emceeing the service that day, and he made a plea. This was on that Sunday. The following Saturday is when this 5-hour ministry to special needs families was coming. And John made a plea: we need IBCers to show up and to help with this. And 22 of you went right out there and signed up, and you were there for this special needs ministry that happened here on campus 2 weeks ago. It was awesome. It was awesome. I was on campus, and as I often do when I'm on campus and stuff like this is going on, I sneak around. And I look in windows and I watch, and I just love so much to see God's people in action. And I saw on that day all these families come to IBC for ministry. The parents in those special needs families got a kids-free meal, massages. We had nap rooms for the parents. How cool is that? Craft time, all with other parents who have kiddos with special needs, and so they knew what each other was going through. Meanwhile, the kids, in some cases the adults with special needs, got paired with a buddy and rotated between different activities like sports, a mini petting zoo, painting, Bible time, bounce houses, and the day ended with the talent show to end all talent shows. And all of that happened because a group of IBCers stepped up exhibited the love and the beauty of God. That's what you did. That's what you did. Jesus implies, very simply, in his prayer for us, in his three prayers for us, he implies that if we will have unity and glory and beauty, that God will use us to transform the world. He really will. Warren Wiersbe says, the lost world cannot see God, but they can see Christians. And what they see in us is what they will believe about God. As we come to the table this morning, again, I'm just amazed at how the elements of this Lord's table really reflect the three prayers that Jesus made for his church: unity, glory, and beauty. As we together partake as one of these elements, we experience the unity of our faith that is not based on externals, but internals and eternals. As we partake together of these elements, we are rehearsing the glory of Christ, who experienced the pleasure of his Father by laying his life down to do the Father's will. And we are experiencing the beauty of the love of God, as we meditate on this bread and this cup representing Jesus shed blood for us, and the amazingly beautiful expression of the love of God towards us that this is. Unity, glory, beauty. We're going to experience this in just a moment. And just to let you know that this morning it's going to be with music, musical reflection in the background. So that as you come and participate in these elements, that you can have some space in your mind to think about Christ's prayer for you as expressed through these elements for unity, glory, and beauty. If you're here visiting with us today and you're wondering, hey, should I go and participate in the Lord's table? Let me just tell you, this is not the table of Irving Bible Church. This is the table of Jesus. And if you belong to Jesus by faith, he invites you. Come. You come. If you're unable to navigate the steps, just raise your hands. Our ushers will come and serve you where you sit. And so in the night in which he was betrayed, the Lord Jesus took bread. He blessed it and broke it. Said, this is my body. Give it for you. Later, he took the cup. This cup is the new covenant in my blood. As often as you drink it, remember me. Let's do so now.